Samela Yanulotumlinsi. Samela.
Welcome to iMother Podcast.
Samela Yanulotumlinsi. Samela.
My name is Silja Nikolina Runestadter Kvalheim, and I am your host. iMother Podcast is a fellowship for and by women to share wisdom, experiences, and resources around birth and motherhood, and about resurrecting the soul after times of darkness. iMother is a term that derived in Sapmi, about traditional midwives and medicine women. A woman who could look into the souls of birthing women and hold space for her. She was a guide into the unknown in both birth as well as death, a priestess of transformations of the soul. I am a mother, birth worker, and light worker, and my sole work on this planet is to help women in and after birth to be wild and true and own their bodies and their stories. By sharing our wisdom and our stories, I believe we create a world for our children where women are supported, empowered, and held. In the background, you're hearing Mari Boina, together with Madosini. Welcome to iMother. Welcome to episode 9 of iMother Podcast. I'm really excited to share with you this episode with beautiful Emily Ruth. I was having some internet trouble on recording this episode, so my apologies for this. I'm realizing the need to upgrade my technicalities for the podcast. And yeah, so we'll see how that unfolds in time. In this episode, we're speaking about birth loss and how to live with loss and grief. The importance of finding your people and sometimes new people or new friends that can hold the space of grief and healing when we go deep into our dark nights. I know from my own experience of grief and losing loved ones, as well as the feeling of being homeless in my own body after obstetric violence, that going into darkness is necessary and a part of being human. There is no one that can set a time limit for this process. You are grieving as long as there is need to grieve. You don't get over it, you never get over it, but you learn to live with it. Abortion and birth loss is something I imagine is very hard to find healing for, as very few people talk about grief. And when no one talks about it, it's also difficult to find the right words to explain the sensations we feel within. When I listened to Emily on Grief Grower's Garden, a really deep and lovely podcast about grief by Shelby Forsythia that I can highly recommend, it felt like she put words into my physical, emotional, and spiritual experience. It was like, grief. Ah, that's what's going on. There is grief here. And she also, because she was a dancer, her reflections on losing contact with her body and feeling homeless in her own temple resonated deeply with me. Abortions and birth loss really is traumatic for our bodies, and sometimes it takes years for them to surface. Abortions and birth loss really needs equal support postpartum as a full-term live birth. The mothers really need time to heal and to grieve. They need hands-on therapies, good food, someone to speak to and feel safe with. In the interview with Emily, she mentions how she speaks to people about her living children and her past children. She says, when people ask, I have three living children. I had a miscarriage while I was dancing and living in New York something like 15 years ago. I had no idea I was pregnant, but I was feeling so heavy and tired for some weeks without understanding what was going on. I remember a friend of mine from Norway came to visit, and she was staying in my room, and one night I had this horrible nightmare. I dreamt that my Greek free-spirited boyfriend, who I was sort of having a long-distance relationship with, came on his motorcycle with a baby packed on the back seat, wrapped in some kind of cloth. He stops on a field by a big tree with low branches and swings the baby over the branch, ties a knot and basically hangs him, and leaves him to suffocate. There's blood everywhere, and he returns to his bike and drives off. I wake up, partially not able to breathe, and like screaming, like, I'm pregnant. We go to the hospital, and I've already done, my body has already done a spontaneous abortion. I think I had like one day off of dance, and then I was on again. I didn't have the space, I wasn't mature enough to actually sit with that. The past months, I've been processing this loss, feeling into my womb, and feeling if there's a boy in my space that needs to be acknowledged. And I have found that there is. And while connecting with this, I have also had more violent dreams that I feel are the death of ego dreams as I enter into the wilderness. The death of generational trauma dreams. I had a dream a few weeks ago where I saw myself being tied down to the floor in like an old dirty house. I had been tied down for months or years even, and I was a mix between an animal and a woman. My womb was ripped open and I was bleeding all over the place. When I came closer to myself, I was hissing and growling. Then, after a bit, a young girl shows up. She looks like the girl from the movie The Shining, you know? She pulls up a knife and looks at me with a cold and murderous look. I wake up out of the dream, feeling like shit scared and honestly too scared to go pee. I turn around to look at some drawings Indra has made me with flowers to remind myself that it's only a dream. So, guys, in this episode, we go deep into the darkness of our souls, unafraid. Because when something dies, something new is born. And surely becoming an autonomous woman means facing our demons and taking responsibility for the load we carry. And as Emily says in the interview, it is through our wounds that light can enter. Here is Emily's biography. Emily Ruth is a dancer and former birth doula. Both fields prepared her with a deep respect of the body and to cultivate a desire to learn everything she can to understand, connect with, and serve others in whatever capacity she's called to do. Emily studied dance at university, but due to health challenges, stepped away at the end of the program. Later, she returned to complete a BS in marriage and family sciences. Emily has enjoyed her work as a personal and family coach. She's currently pursuing a master's degree to be a marriage and family therapist, and is especially interested in post-traumatic growth and how families heal from trauma, both somatically and relationally. Emily's experiences with pregnancy, loss, and mothering have shaped her path in important ways. Her children and birth stories are her greatest teachers. Of the work she's doing now, she says, it feels like coming home. Emily lives in the desert of Arizona, USA, with her husband, three sons, and a cat. You can find her online at emilyruthcares.com and on Instagram at emilyruth. Enjoy the show.
Is my sound okay?
Yeah, you sound all right. I'll just turn up the volume a bit, so it's all right.
Okay, great. Then I won't need my headset.
How are you?
Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. I'm very happy that you're here and joining the podcast.
Thank you. How do I say your name? I'm embarrassed. I read it, and I want to make sure I'm saying it right.
Don't worry, you're really not the first one. My name is Silja.
Silja.
Yeah.
Silja.
Silja.
Okay. Yeah. Lovely to meet you.
Lovely to meet you. I've had you like in my space for some time, and I re-listened to the Grief Growers Garden episode that you were in. A few days back, and when I maybe it's a year ago or something when I reached out to you after listening to that episode for the first time, and it was really mind-blowing to me. Like I felt so grateful to have heard that episode, because it just it just put my whole experience with my own birth in like a whole, it just put words on something that I didn't have words for. Like, it was like, oh shit, there's a grief here. That's what's going on. Like, and also, especially, you know, cause we have a bit of a similar background, being that we're both dancers and when you put that whole, you know, how connected you'd been to your body and how your losses affected the whole, your relationship to your body. It was just like, shit, like that's what's going on. It was just like a stepping stone of me realizing like what's actually going on inside of me.
So I'm so happy that I could be a part of your experience. That's amazing and beautiful. And I'm so grateful that you're doing your own work so that you can help all the rest of us with this podcast.
Yeah, that's been really like the whole after, like now my daughter is four. So the last year, basically, I've been, you know, deep diving into this whole sense of everything. And you know, I think, I don't know how it was for you, but you know, the shift for me really happened when I realized that like the wound or the supposed weakness is actually where you find your, you know, purpose.
Yes, as Leonard Cohen so eloquently says, there's cracks in everything. That's where the light gets in, right?
Yeah.
I mean, I completely agree with that. I think that that in my case for sure as well, that's been the situation, is that my grief and my losses have led me to the work that I'm doing. So
yeah. So Emily, can you just share a bit about yourself and where you are and how you're living your life?
Sure. Like geographically where I am?
Yeah, all of it. All of it.
Okay. I'm in the US. I'm in Arizona. If you're familiar with the desert, that's where I am. And it's very warm here right now. I think it was 110 degrees yesterday. So
wow.
I feel like as I come into summer, it's like you know, seasons, there's a reason for every season, right? Mm. And summer, I think for me tends to be a season of I'm stripping away the layers. I mean, as I'm like removing clothing, I'm like removing, okay, what is it that I am ready to let go of? And so I've been going through a period of like, what would you say? Just getting rid of lots of stuff.
Hmm.
And I found that to be really symbolic. I think as I'm letting go of possessions and things that I realize I no longer need, I've had to do some kind of a different layer of work. Hmm. Anyway, that's maybe a different topic. But so I'm in Arizona. It's really hot here right now. I'm married and I have three boys. I have two older boys from a first marriage. And then I just had a little one. It's been 18 months now. Yeah. I can't really call him a baby anymore, though. He's still nursing, so I pretend he's a baby still.
Yeah, well, it feels a bit like that, doesn't it?
Yeah, exactly. So that's where I am in the planet and kind of where I am in my life. I'm in a school program right now. I'm back in school. And so doing a lot of studying and reading and learning and trying to keep a real open mind, a beginner's mindset, so that I can just take in all the good stuff that there is to learn right now. So when you reached out about the podcast, I thought, oh, this will be such a fun opportunity to talk to more people and hear from more people. So anyway.
And what are you studying?
I'm in a grad program to be a marriage and family therapist.
Yeah, that's what you said. Yeah. That sounds really interesting. Do you want to just share a bit about that?
Yeah, sure. Well, I think it this journey, I mean, really kind of started for me like 11 years ago. I started my work as a birth worker. I was a doula and then a midwife apprentice for a little bit. And my favorite part of serving women was just talking to them and more listening to them, not even so much talking to them, but hearing, you know, what their pregnancy was bringing up for them in their lives. I mean, pregnancy and birth is such like a creative, it's just a really beautiful time for families. And I loved hearing the process that women were going through. A lot of times their grief would be coming up, you know, over various things in their lives. And I loved just sitting in those spaces. It felt so sacred and beautiful and such an honor to be in those spaces with women. And that's really kind of, I think, where the spark of wanting to do this kind of work that I'm doing started. Although I didn't know it at the time. I didn't think in my mind, oh, I want to be a counselor or a therapist. I wasn't really thinking about it. I just thought, oh, I love this doula work. I love sitting with women and being in these spaces. And of course, birth. I mean, I was drawn to that as well, but probably equally as much the time prior to the birth in their preparation just felt really important to me. So that's kind of where the seed started, I think, for about 11 years ago. And just as life has kind of, you know, there's kind of this unwinding that happens. About 2 years ago, I started realizing that I really wanted to go back to school. And so I prepared, and about a year later, I started my program. So
wow. Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And how has it been?
It's good. It sort of forces you to do more of your own personal work, I think. You know, I can't sit with a client and ask them to do work that I haven't done myself.
I know.
I think I can only help them go as deeply as I've gone myself. So it's the last year, to be quite honest, has been really hard, but in all the right ways, all the right ways. I think I'm in a space of more, I wouldn't say I'm being compelled as much to doing this as much as I'm choosing it. I'm really choosing at this point in my life to take a look at some of these things that are recurring, some patterns that I have in my own life, things that haven't been working that I haven't quite known how to address. And I don't feel any shame about it. I think in the past when I've had, you know, things that weren't working in my life, I felt a lot of shame, like, oh, I don't have this figured out yet. And really at this point, I'm just excited that I'm like seeing it and that I'm blessed with people around me that can help me navigate it. So it's going really well, but it's exhausting.
Yeah, all these transformations are often quite exhausting, I would say.
Yes.
And demanding for, yeah. Mm-hmm. So Emily, would you like to share with us your story of loss? Because I know it's quite many years of that in your life. Mm-hmm. We haven't spoken so much about losses on this podcast, but when I just felt like I really wanted to speak on that, and then I just remembered you and your story and how it just blew my, I can't even find words for it. It just like knocked me off my, yeah.
Well, what would you like me to, what part of that? I mean, I don't know. You only have an hour, right? But what part of it would you like me to talk about? What would be most helpful to your listeners?
Well, I just, like, what really touched me was how you, like, navigated with your intuition and your inner sense of what was going on inside you.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's a whole second part that I really didn't get into on that podcast, and maybe that would be useful to address a little bit here. But it also might be helpful to give a little bit of context. How can I condense this down? So I married really quite young. I was still in university and I was performing with a few dance companies in the area. And I think my little guy is just waking up.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry. He just went down for a nap. Okay. Can I have 30 seconds?
Yes,
I'm going to bring him
course.
In and I think I'll just feed him while we talk.
Oh, of course.
Okay.
That's how it is being a mom. On demand.
Well, we're back. So I was still at university, and I think I'd only been married just about a year when we discovered that we were unexpectedly pregnant. And at that point, I hadn't really thought that much about motherhood. It's not that I didn't want to be a mother, but I was so focused on my career, and I was starting to get into theater work, and I think I was just shocked to having my plans really shift from thinking all about myself to, you know, thinking about caring for another human. And so I was probably equally surprised by my sudden desire to really want this baby. And it sort of opened a door. It's almost like it opened up a door to a room in my home I didn't even know existed. That makes sense. And so I was excited to explore this room, but after just the first, I think we had just passed the first trimester, I miscarried that pregnancy. And so many well-meaning people, you know, loving people were telling me it was for the better and that in my family having miscarriages was normal, or having a few of them was normal, and that I could finish school and continue performing and all of these things. But to be honest, I felt like a lot of shame for grieving that loss and feeling it as deeply as I did. And somehow I think I thought I was selfish for wanting to keep the baby, which is like now looking back, I'm like, why? I don't know quite why I felt that way, but I did. I felt like it was almost selfish. And so even though I'd lost that pregnancy, I started really reading up on pregnancy and birth and sort of forming my own like birth philosophy. So like, okay, well, in the future, if or when I have a baby, you know, what would I want it to be like, or how would I want it to go? And so that time ended up being a real gift that I had the time to really explore and learn, well, what does birth mean to me as a woman? And I didn't really explore what the loss meant to me, but I think there was that side of it as well, like where I was thinking about loss and, that's climbing all over things and she's making noise. So about 6 years passed, and I did have one more miscarriage, but then immediately after we conceived our oldest son. And in that go around, I had this sense from the very beginning of that pregnancy that I would carry full term. And I had like no fears and no concerns. I really felt so held in that time. And I did have a really beautiful pregnancy, and I was able to have a planned home birth. I had a really deeply supportive midwife, and it was just so empowering to feel that connection with my body and with my son, with my son's body. Mm. And in my own home, surrounded by, loved ones and women, I was really served by women during that time. And I just couldn't have asked for a more gentle, loving birth experience. So that's kind of the context of like where I was at. Mm. So less than a year later, in 2008, I became pregnant again. And at 14 weeks, we found out that it wasn't just one baby. I was carrying twins. And I switched from my midwife to an obstetrician, because here in Arizona, it's, midwives are not legally allowed to support multiple births. And so I switched to an obstetrician, and it was such a different experience right from the beginning for me. And now I know lots of women that have really, lovely obstetricians and beautiful hospital births, but I had a lot of kind of fear around hospitals, and that's like a totally different conversation, but it was not where I wanted to give birth and to start with. But then I just felt very kind of dismissed during a lot of my appointments. I say a lot, I actually didn't have that many appointments. I miscarried just before 6 months before I was pregnant with them. Not miscarried. I gave birth to them prematurely just before 6 months, and they didn't survive. And it was, without going into all of the details, although I don't know how much you want to hear there. I want to respect your listeners. I don't know if you have a lot of listeners who are pregnant or expecting.
No, just please go into it, and I'll just pause you if it's too much.
Okay. Yes. You can edit this down if you need to. Yeah. I felt very dismissed in a lot of my experience with that doctor. She, I didn't feel heard. I didn't feel heard. And the day before they were born, I felt, and actually to rewind, a few weeks before they were born, I had this premonition. I had, I don't know if you call it a spiritual experience or what, but I went outside and the sky, it was cloudy. And I just had this feeling of like, Emily, you need to stop and really pay attention in this moment. And I was like, okay. So I just stopped and I kind of looked at the sky and the clouds, the way they were kind of like swirling and getting darker. Like it felt like this really important moment, and I couldn't really pinpoint why. It didn't make sense in that moment until later looking back. But I had this profound sense of like this exquisite grief like wash over me from my head to my toes. And it I don't know how to explain it other than I felt it. It was like my body was quaking inside. Yeah. I felt this deep sense of grief. And it was like from that moment on, I knew there was something different. Something wasn't quite right. And so at all my appointments, I started asking, can you check the baby? And I had never had this fear with my oldest son, that I had had a year previous. I never feared. In fact, they would ask me, do you want this test or do you want this done? And I'd always decline. I'd be like, no, I feel baby's really healthy. I never even questioned it. But this pregnancy, I just felt so different. And I was asking for them to run tests that weren't really necessary, but they would oblige. And they would just kind of, it was almost like they were patting my head. It's okay. You're fine. Babies are fine. Mm-hmm. And anytime I expressed that something didn't feel right, they would just say, well, this is going to be different than your first pregnancy. This is twins and you had a singleton and it's going to feel different. And I just didn't feel really heard after this, when I started asking all these questions. And so the day before they were born, it really intensified, and I couldn't not say something. And I called the office and I said, I think I need to get in. And I had just been in like 3 days before that, I think. And they were like, Emily, all your tests are fine. You're fine, basically. And I couldn't shake that feeling. And I went to bed that night just feeling so just heavy. Like I just had a weight on my chest. Like I can't even describe it, but I felt so heavy. And I woke up in the middle of the night. And I don't know what I was dreaming, but I woke up crying, like just in grief. That's the only way I can describe it. The next morning I woke up and I thought I've got to get into somebody. If my doctor won't see me, I've got to find someone else. And so I called a midwife friend of mine and told her what I was feeling. And I knew her kind of her philosophy, you know, she's very much like, well, we need to listen to women. We need to listen to mothers. When they have intuition, we need to hear it. You know, things in the medical world don't always show up what's going on. And the intuition is really important. And so I knew that that was her view, or that was the lens that she looked through. And so I called her, and she had some connections at a local hospital, and she called a friend of hers who is a perinatologist and said, I've got, you know, a friend who needs to be seen. And this perinatologist amazingly said, send her, I'm here right now, I'm on call, send her over to the hospital. And so she called me right back, and I started packing a bag, and I'm not kidding, not 2 minutes later, I dropped to my knees in labor.
Shit.
Just suddenly, just out of the blue, it was like 0 to 60, and no one was home. I was by myself. My husband had gone to work, and I was alone. I had my toddler. I had my one-year-old with me. And so I called my husband to come home, and I called a neighbor, and they came over and took care of my baby while I don't know why I didn't think to call an ambulance. Like that didn't feel like the right thing. I don't know why. We lived just a few minutes, like 5 minutes from the hospital. So I think I figured by the time they got there and by the time they got to the hospital, it would, you know, wouldn't be any faster. And so my husband came home really quick and drove me over. And on the way to the hospital, I knew it was like I had this. It was almost like someone told me without hearing words, but I knew that my babies wouldn't survive. And we got to the door at the hospital and my water broke. And because I was carrying twins, everyone at the door thought I was full term with a singleton. Mm. They were so excited for us, like, oh, you're having your baby. And I was like, no, you don't understand. This is not a good thing that I'm in labor. And I went into the room and they were already on their way. And the doctor on call just held my face in her hands and said, you know, these babies are coming. And I said, I know. I think I've known since yesterday, and no one was hearing me. And she said, there's not anything we can do for them at this point. That I was not even quite 6 months along. And this hospital it wasn't equipped, although now it's equipped to deal with really premature babies. But at the time they weren't. And she said, do you want us to have, to do extraordinary measures, you know, do you want us to hook them up to IVs and all the things? And I felt so strongly that I needed them with me and that they needed to be on my chest. And I knew that they weren't going to survive it. And I couldn't imagine hooking them up to all those things and putting them through that when I just knew that they wouldn't make it. And they lived under an hour and they died on my chest, and it was probably, I think the part of that experience that was the hardest really was the leading up to it. Once I went into labor, it's like I knew what was going to happen, and it was traumatic, but there was a part of me that knew what was happening. Like, I don't know really why I had like a sense of peace about it. But it was more the leading up to it when I felt so unheard. That really was in some ways more difficult.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I'm so sorry for that.
Thank you. Thank you. It's been, that was in 2008, October of 2008. And it's interesting. I've only really told this story a handful of times. And each time I feel different feelings come up every time I tell it. And this time I think what I'm feeling is a sense of that I'm being heard now.
Oh.
Witness, you know, I'm feeling the witness.
I'm glad you're feeling like that. How do you deal with something like that?
Well, I think everyone deals with it differently. It's been a real journey for me. And like we said earlier, I think this experience has led me on a particular journey that I certainly wouldn't have planned for. I think anyone who loses a child or really anyone close to them, we know in our minds what we hear grief is like or what losing someone is like, but then when it happens, it's a full body experience. Mm. You feel it in your whole body. I remember in the first year after waking up and just everything hurt. The hair on my head hurt. Mm. My fingernails hurt. Mm. My whole body was grieving and there was really no way to stop it. And in some ways I didn't want to stop it. It validated the fact that they existed. The fact that I was feeling this. I had no babies in my arms. I even, and this is maybe an interesting detail, some might find it really strange, but when I'm pregnant, I get that line, that dark line, just that goes between from your navel, you know, down to your yoni. And what do they call that? The linea negra, I think. Mm. It's like a dark line from hormones, I think. And I remember after they were born, as that line started disappearing, mm. It was so hard because that was what proved to me that I had been pregnant, that I had had babies in my womb. Mm. And when that started disappearing and even my stretch marks, when they kind of started going away, it was like I had to grieve it all over again. It was, there's like layers, like an onion that you're peeling with grief, and each new milestone or each new, you know, I remember I met a woman, it was at a park with my older son. And he was swinging on the swings and she had some two little boys I saw running around that were younger than my son. And we started talking and I said, oh, how old are your boys? And they were twin boys and they had been born 4 days before my twin boys had been born. And I remember looking at them and suddenly, I mean, this poor woman, she had no idea. She had no idea, you know, my history or what I had gone through. And I just start tearing up, just tears rolling down my face as I realize, wow, that's about how old or how big my boys would be at this point. And I, of course, I didn't say anything. I, you know, in public, when people say, how many children do you have? It's weird to know. I don't know what you say when you've lost a child. What do you say? Do you include them or do you give some long story of why? Well, I now say I have three living children, and I think that it honors the fact that I had more babies than I'm holding here on this planet. And it lets people know that without me having to go into a long story that, you know, maybe someone isn't prepared to hear. But anyway, your question is, how do you deal with that? And I don't know, I guess one day at a time, because every day is so different that I kind of needed something different every day. I remember friends would call and, well, at first they called. After a little while, when time passes, sometimes people don't know what to say later. And so sometimes friendships dissolve or people disappear because they don't know what to say.
Yeah.
And it's understandable. At the time, it was really hard to suddenly feel my whole social structure was evaporated, essentially. But at first people would call and they would say, what do you need? And it was different every day. Some days I just needed someone to come and hold my toddler so that I could cry in my room for 2 hours. I mean, literally that was what happened some days. And some days I was grateful to have someone drop a meal off at my door. Some days I would want someone to just come and sit and be with me. But yeah, it's different every day. And I think everyone's process of going through the grief is different.
And how did your body cope? Like, were you supported? Like, did you get healing work done? And like, were you able to care for your postpartum body?
That's a good question. At the time, it was a little bit difficult for me to know where to turn because my birth community with my oldest son, you know, the natural birth community, I think they, a lot of my friends in that community didn't quite know, you know, here not only had I not given birth in a, at home, but I gave birth to babies that died. Mm-hmm. And I think, and this isn't to, I'm not trying to speak badly of anyone, but I think in the natural birth community, or at least home birth community, a lot of people have that saying, trust birth, or, mm-hmm. you know, it's the idea of trust the process, which I understand. And I went on to have another 2 home births. And so it's not that I don't value that experience of trusting the process, but more so I trust women. I trust women to be able to handle the experiences that we have in life. And so I don't want to go blindly into, oh, just trust the process, because in my experience, the process wasn't always soft and cushy at the end. And so your question of, sorry, to circle back around your question of, did I find support? I didn't know where to go. I felt homeless. My home birth community kind of didn't really know, I think, how to be there for me in that experience. And my doctor wasn't exactly supportive. I think there may have been concerns about malpractice, considering that I had shared that I was concerned the day before, and then I lost the babies. And I don't know. I don't know if I had gone in, if I had just showed up at the office and insisted they see me. I don't know if, you know, maybe everything would have turned out the same as it did. In fact, it likely could have. When they ran tests, they didn't know why I went into spontaneous labor. So there's a good chance that things would have turned out the same. And so I'm not placing blame at all, but I think everyone was a little hesitant to really be there with me for fear of me blaming, you know, anyone, if that makes sense. And so I didn't get a lot of help and support with my family or with my body in the beginning. It wasn't until years later.
Yeah.
I would say about 6 years later that I realized the trauma that my body had been through. In fact, I had another baby 2 years later. And that was a really beautiful experience. And I would say that I kind of peeled another layer of the onion of my grief in that birth experience. And my midwife, I had the same midwife that I had with my oldest. And she was very, very supportive. And I think had I brought up my grief, she would have been there for me and sat with me in that. But I don't know. Maybe I wasn't ready. I don't know. But it wasn't until 5 or 6 years later that I really got support. I mean, I started getting body work and started seeing a therapist and really felt like I could address the physical trauma that happened when I lost those babies.
I think it takes it's like the body has a different like time zone, almost, like, you know, it takes so much longer for it to like digest.
There's like a metabolization, I think, of you're saying the process of, and so, you know, maybe I just wasn't ready. I mean, I want to honor too that maybe that I just needed the time. I don't know, but it wasn't until about 6 years later, I'm doing the math, I'm trying to think, about 6 years later, I started really addressing it. And I will just say, even the last year has been somatically, I've started really tuning in a way that I wasn't able to even before that, where I'm addressing some of the trauma that has kind of been living in my body, sort of like a low hum,
Isn't it difficult to find the words for these sensations physically?
It's like the only way I can describe it is, have you heard like a tall bass, like a bass with a bow and a string and whatever. I think of like running the bow across the lowest string of the bass. There's like that resonance, like that vibration. I felt that in my body, I think, for 10 years before I really heard it.
Yeah,
I felt it before I heard it.
Yeah.
Like this low buzzing
And it's like you can't even, like, if you don't have anyone to mirror you, like, you can't find the words for what you're experiencing.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. That's exactly right. And so, yeah, I think the healing has just been, it's, you know, 11 years and ongoing. And I don't want to say, I would say I'm in a much different place than I was 11 years ago, obviously. Mm. But I'm still surprised sometimes when it pops up again and I'm like, oh, there you are, grief. I see you.
Mm.
I see you.
Yeah, grief is really such a humongous, like, topic that is not very much, like, talked about, really.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what is the culture like where you are? Because I know here in the States, it's very taboo, really. I mean, it's maybe the last few years it started to get more culturally appropriate to bring it up. People are recognizing how important it is to process that and to feel witnessed. But on the whole, culturally, here in the U.S., it's not been, people don't talk about it.
No, and I think also it's about, like, you know, these big griefs, let's say, and the secondary griefs.
Yeah.
I don't, like, when I heard your interview, it was like, shit, like, because I throughout my life, like, I've had a few losses, like, my grandmother and my father died, and, people that are close to me. And listening to that show, it was like, there was so many concepts that was like, that's it, you know? And if you don't, if we're not aware of what we're feeling, it's also so difficult to go out and ask someone for help.
Yes.
It's like, yeah, you know, like... And I guess that's, like, it just mirrors the fact that our society is very, like, I don't know, we're very distant from each other in a way. Because, you know, everyone experiences grief. And if you share that you're, like, this feeling or sensation and someone else has experienced the same, you know, you can mirror the other person. But it's like we don't go into these spaces in our communities, at least not that easily, you know?
Right. Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, especially in I don't know, I'm thinking about how birth and death are, like, the two taboo subjects that I'm thinking of, at least in you know, where I, the communities that I've grown up in. And I was able to find a community where birth was acceptable to talk about.
Mm.
And I was excited about that. And then as soon as death popped up in my world, then death wasn't really acceptable to talk about in the birth community. And so then I felt homeless. I don't know. You mentioned that you had a question about that.
I was just thinking about that because you know, one of the things that you were speaking about on that episode was like, that was really big for me was you were saying that you felt homeless in your own body, in your own self, like you didn't know who, like, what is this thing that I'm living in, like, because it's so different.
Yes.
And like, this is still, for me at least, something that I'm still, like, I'm getting to know my new body with my trauma. And And it just, my body, especially, like, as a dancer, like, because for me, I almost, like, I quit, not like voluntarily, but as a result of my birth. And still I can have these, yesterday I was, because I'm meeting a dance friend of mine. I don't have many anymore, but I have a few, and then I'm meeting her next week. And then I was listening to the song in the car, and I was, like, visualizing, you know how you do, I was visualizing dancing, which I've done all my life. And then it just brings up all these emotions, and I keep, like, this is such a big mystery to me still, that, like, I'm like the freedom that you have as a dancer in your body, like this trust and this freedom, it's just poof, it's just blown out the window.
It's ripped away from you.
Yeah. And I'm still like, is that a space that I should, or like I want, or I, you know, that I want to get back into somehow in a different way? But it's like this still like a mystery, like, yeah, I don't know. I still don't know what it's about, kind of thing.
That resonates for me so much. I know for me, what I've kind of started connecting the dots to, and I don't think I have even all of my answers, much less anyone else's. But for me, I started realizing with dance that freedom that you're talking about, for me, that left me free to feel. It left me free to be and experience, you know, the world and the space around me. And when it feels unsafe to feel anymore, or I feel overwhelmed by the feelings coming at me or the world around me, then dance feels like, whoa, that's a challenge. That's a channel to feel even more than I'm already feeling. And I that's too much. I can't do it. I can't let myself feel any more than I'm already feeling.
Yeah.
So I don't know for you, but for me, the experience I had losing my babies, and I imagine losing a father or anyone else in your life, that feels like, it felt like the apocalypse for me, which is interesting that we're having this conversation right now with COVID and everything going on, but it felt like the apocalypse and no one was listening to me, or no one really could hear what my experience was, how it was for me. You know, my friends and family, they knew what the experience was for them, but my own experience, no, I didn't know how to connect with anyone that knew what I was feeling. And so my world for me, as I knew it, was ending. And because the world isn't a safe place, when you know deep in your bones that something has changed, that your world is rocked, that everything is different, and no one's listening, I had to change the way I thought about my world. If I believed that the world was an unsafe place and that no one really understood me, that's a really scary way to grow up or to live the rest of my life. So instead, I think for myself, I had to turn it around and tell myself that I was somehow wrong, that somehow I should be able to figure this out and get through it and move on with my life, because, you know, we hear that. Well, you have to move over, you have to get over it, or you have to, and there's no getting over that. There's no getting over losing your father or losing your babies, or you don't get over it. And even when you get through it, you always carry parts of that grief with you, right? I mean, that's my experience, is I will always carry that grief with me. It's all I have. I don't have my babies. I have my grief.
Yeah, there's like an unspoken limit of like, how long is it normal to be in that space, you know, that you're in process of this thing.
Yes.
It's about time for you to move on now.
Yeah. There's like a socially acceptable calendar. And if you go past the day looks or whatever, I mean, that's very real. I mean, I at the time when I lost them, I started writing on a blog. I was pretty open. I'm a kind of introverted person, but I am pretty open on social media and on, you know, on my blog that I was writing on. And I think maybe 2 or 3 years out, I was still writing. I mean, I would still have these dreams sometimes, and I would wake up and I would write my dream. And I had someone close to me, you know, someone who you would think would have my back. And one day they called me up and they said, "You've got to stop. Like, this has got to end. You've got to get over this one day. And you're just wallowing." That was kind of the word that was used. Like, you're just wallowing. And I was just shocked that, and it just affirmed even more that it wasn't acceptable for me to feel as deeply as I was feeling.
Oops.
To make that okay. And
I just lost everything that you said the past minute.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened.
Oh, okay. I think I heard you say oops.
Oh, yeah.
But then screen froze, and so I wasn't sure.
You were saying your friend called and what she said to you.
Yeah, you have to stop. This can't go on. You need to move on. You're just wallowing in it. Like, these were all kind of, and I just kind of sat there and listened. I couldn't even respond, really. And I think from that point on, maybe it wasn't 3 years out. Maybe it was 2 years. It had been a couple of years. I think the first year people are really understanding. And then after that, they kind of don't know what to do with it. It's like, what? She's still grieving?
Mm.
She's still struggling? And they're uncomfortable with their own feelings about it, right? Like, they can't control how you're feeling. And it makes them uncomfortable.
Mm.
And so then they're trying to navigate, well, how can we... And sometimes they're very helpful. I mean, genuinely, they're wanting to be helpful. But oftentimes, it's not helpful. We just need witness. And we just need to do our process. And that takes years.
Yeah,
and
that's it really hard for does. People to,
that's hard for people to accept that they can't make everything better.
Hmm. And, and these days, Emily, where are your boys? And how do you... where are they, I guess I can say,
yeah,
for you?
They're doing well. I think that my older boys are 12 and 10, actually almost 13 and 10, and they saw me during some really dark... they saw me in some really dark times. I mean, I think that first year with my toddler, I didn't leave my bedroom really the first year. I mean, truly, I was so deep in grief. And then even after I had my fourth son, so I had my oldest, then I had twins, and then my fourth son, I was only 2.5 years out from losing my babies when I had him. So they've pretty much their whole lives, they've seen me navigating grief.
Mm.
And they've seen me in some really, and I've never really hid. I mean, I think I've toned down. I've never wanted them to feel unsafe or like mommy wasn't going to be okay. But I've never hid when I was upset or sad.
Mm.
Because I want to model for them.
Yeah, we're all good. I was going to say that
okay.
I really admire that, like, openness towards your children. I have to say, like, for me, it's still a bit of a challenge to... I mean, I don't have a thing with my daughter to express, like, weakness, let's say. Not that crying is weakness, but I'm, like, to be vulnerable. But, like, really, like, sobbing, like... Because when I'm in my, like, tantrums of dealing with the shit, I'm, like, you know... Yeah, I'm sure you know what I'm saying. And that's, like, a barrier for me. Somehow, that's not a... It's not like I think that it's not okay, because that's not what I think, but there's some kind of a protection or something that is difficult for me to go into those deep emotions if I know she's, like, around me somehow.
I mean, my own experience as a mother, I never want my children to feel like they're... caregiver is not going to be okay, because then that means I won't be able to care for them, right? So I understand, like, there needing to be a boundary of, like, I can only show so much to them because I don't, they're children.
Kids and experiencing the deep emotions.
So am I hearing you correctly? You're saying that there's, like, you set a boundary of, like, you can only show so much emotion with your children. Is that what I'm hearing? Or your daughter?
Yeah, somehow. Like, when I'm, when I'm going in, because I guess what I'm feeling is that when I'm dealing with my trauma, I'm like this far in my process, I have enough, like it's enough for me to go in and feel into that and feel safe without me having to make her feel safe, let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I mean, yeah. I think that makes a lot of sense. You're protecting her from, you know, that secondary trauma. You don't want to traumatize her. And that, yeah. that makes a lot of sense. I think that we as parents, you know, to some degree always want to protect our children from that. So, no, I think that makes absolute sense. I think my kid, I think my first or after my twins, I had a limited ability to do that. I mean, I was pretty much, I just was in bed a lot of the year, to be really quite honest. And I wouldn't say I was more numb. I was maybe more numb than anything else. But, after that, I think there comes a point where the deep sobbing, that sort of thing that you're talking about. I don't know that I could have really shown that side of it to my children as well. I think that I don't want them to feel that vulnerability, I guess.
Yeah, Emily, I feel like I could speak with you for hours. So it's almost like I have to narrow the conversation down a bit because I'm like curious about how many things, but... I guess what I'm like a bit curious about and that would be nice to hear a bit about was, you know, how you're a bit about your healing journey and what did give you support?
Well, there have been several, I think, modalities, if you call it that, the last few years even. I think I spent several years sort of treading water with my healing, just getting to a place where I was stabilized because I'm just such a deep healer. It was just so, it just rocked my world. And so, and I will say this too, I won't go into all the details, but there were several losses all around that time. I lost my marriage just a few years after. I say lost my marriage, meaning like it was a loss. I lost my marriage financially. I was in a really, I would say, destitute state at one point after I lost them financially, you know, the hospital bills and all of that. It was, it was overwhelming. So life got really complicated for about 3 years after losing them. It just felt like loss after loss after loss. It was the pileup. And so I felt like I wanted to be in a body cast. Like it felt like my whole body was broken. Every part of me was broken. And it just kept, I just kept discovering more and more broken parts. And so for about 3 years after, really 4 years after, I just spent so much energy just trying to stabilize myself so that I could function and be a mother and a parent. And that's why I think really it wasn't until about 5 or 6 years out that I started even having the resources to get body work and get some, you know, help from a therapist. Because I just didn't even have the resources, I think, to do that. So, sorry, I'm making a short story long here, but I would say, my healing journey really got good. It got juicy. Probably about 4 years ago is when I started really discovering and had the funds, frankly, the resources to actually start seeking out, you know, some good therapy, some good somatic work. I have really in the program that I'm in, and that was really inspiring to me to go back and be a therapist because I thought I want to share what I'm learning. And I'm still learning. I'm always going to be in the trenches. I'm sure as a therapist, I'm not going to have it all figured out. So it really is just going to be about being with my clients and co-regulating with them. But I had no self-regulation. My neurological system, everything was all over the map. I mean, I couldn't self-regulate to save my life. I mean, for those first like 4 or 5 years. But what has really been powerful to me has been this somatic piece, getting my nervous system regulated, so that I can really help my children. You know, they say co-regulation, getting our nervous system calmed down happens in co-regulation first, you know, like a mother with her baby. I mean, you heard my baby crying here. So his nervous system was jumping around. And how does he learn as a baby to become regulated? Well, he co-regulates with me, right? I'm nursing him. He's calming down. His nervous system is learning how it's running hot. And then when he's with mom, it calms down. So co-regulation happens before we learn to self-regulate.
Yeah.
And I don't think in my childhood, that's a whole nother conversation, I ever really learned how to self-regulate. So then as an adult, when these traumatic things happened to me, I had no tools. Literally, I had no tools.
I was just going to ask you, like, how was that connected somehow?
Well, I shouldn't say I had no tools. Dance had been my tool.
Yeah.
I think the fact that I was a dancer was probably the only reason I survived my childhood.
I hear
to
you.
To be really honest.
Fuck yeah.
And I... Yeah, and I do not take, I'm not saying that lightly, like I am dead serious. I don't think I would have survived my childhood had I not been a dancer, because that was the only way I had to tune in with myself. So that really was my only tool of self-regulation, and thank the Lord it was there for me, because that's, I think, what kept me alive. Of moving my body, because it was like I was so overstimulated and feeling so many feelings that the idea of dancing, which I had really connected with, you know, feeling emotion and processing emotion, it was like I had hit my limit. So then all my tools were gone, it felt like, right? So I would say the last four or five years is when I've really gotten the resources and the funds, the financial ability to be able to start working on. And it's sad that that is the case, that there are so many people who just don't have that ability to even get the tools and resources that they need. But that's what I want to do, Kristen, what I was trying to do as a coach, and realized I needed more education. I wanted to have all the tools that I would say there's a few books I would look into if anyone's interested in reading some things that kind of were light bulb moments. Keep Score is one book. There's also another book by Dr. Lawrence Heller called Healing Developmental Trauma. And that's more for like kind of the traumas, like a car accident or, you know, suddenly losing a child or something. That's shocking. But there's another kind of trauma that actually affects our development as humans, the tools and resources we're able to have. So Healing Developmental Trauma by Dr. Lawrence Heller is another book that has really been helpful to me.
What was the first one you said?
Score.
Okay. Yeah.
That's actually by Bessel van der Kolk. And then the work of Peter Levine has been really helpful. I've really just been devouring and reading as much as I could the last 4 or 5 years. And, you know, what's helpful to me may not be helpful to others, but those were kind of the big ones for me that might be helpful. And I would love to share with any of your listeners, if they go to my website, and it may not be up when they first go there, hopefully I can get it up quickly, but I have a tools for self-regulation and tools for co-regulation PDF that they can download.
That's
and cool. And maybe that would be helpful for anyone who has experienced either shock trauma or developmental trauma, anything that can help them get back in their bodies. Because when we've experienced these really traumatic, difficult experiences, it's like we kind of dissociate to protect ourselves. It's a strategy to survive, and it's extremely beneficial. It keeps us alive. But at some point in our lives, when we want to reconnect and we can't, we need some tools, right?
Yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
Thank you, Emily.
You're so welcome.
I was just thinking, you know, because my experience, just, you know, I'm now just educating myself to become postpartum innate provider, and you know, we're talking a lot about this postpartum period, and one of the blind spots of you know, healing after carrying a child, I'm sure you would agree, is if you have a child loss or a abortion, you know, where to go, how to heal, what, you know, are you, you know, can you speak about it? Can you show the world about this? It's like a very big taboo, and it's like something we don't, it's not like a part of what we speak about. And so with your experience, I wanted to ask you, like, if you have any like advice or any like wisdom for women that have experienced these kind of losses and how to deal with them.
That's a really good question. I don't want to speak for what for sure will be helpful to someone else, because what's helpful to me may not be helpful to someone else. But I think talking about it and finding, let me just say this, for a long time when I would talk about it and I saw people disappear, I saw that as a reflection that there was something wrong with me.
Mm.
And as I've come to understand that it had nothing to do with me, it was that certain people weren't in a place to be able to hold that space with me. And that's okay. It doesn't make them wrong, but it doesn't make me wrong.
Mm.
It just means I need to find someone who can hold that space with me.
Mm.
And I think that now, you know, 11 years after my loss, there's a lot more, people are talking about it more, and there's a lot more spaces to share our experiences. But I also think that maybe I won't get into that. I think that finding your safe people and feeling witnessed was really pivotal for me.
Hmm.
There's a few books, if they're pregnant and they've had a loss and they're pregnant again, there's a book called The Fourth Trimester by Kimberly Ann Johnson. And I believe that there's a chapter in there. Beautiful book for anyone who's expecting period, because after a woman has a baby, a lot of people think, oh, she had the baby, and then, you know.
Yeah, done like, with it.
and then there's no more support, and she needs support in that fourth trimester. But yeah. So it's a lovely book for anyone who's pregnant. But I do believe there's a chapter in there where she addresses kind of the spiritual aspect, and I'm not saying religious, but kind of that other, there's something else, you know, to our life experience. She talks to that, speaks to that a little bit.
Mm.
Yeah. Thanks, Emily. I think, I can just feel that must be a really challenging space to be in, because there can't be many mirrors around for those women.
And I think, I don't know, is Facebook a big thing? I mean,
everyone's on Facebook here.
Everyone's on Facebook, and I think that there's probably a lot of virtual, you know, support, and for some that feels more safe, because in person feels, it's a little much. But if it's online, they feel like they can engage to their level of comfort.
Yeah.
And so I know that I've been a part of some Facebook groups that were helpful, and if you can kind of filter out what isn't helpful, but maybe that's obvious and people already know that resource, but
there's like when we do have that worldwide possibility, there's for sure, you know, because you're not alone, like that's the feeling you have, but you're not alone, and that there are people around that needs the same things and needs that mirroring.
Yeah, because I was, you know, maybe the only woman in my neighborhood that had just lost a baby, but even in my city, there's more women that I just don't know. So how would I get connected with them?
Yeah.
I know our hospital did have some resources as well as how to connect to other families, and I'm sure that's probably a possibility in your area as well, just connecting up with the hospitals.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Emily, I'm so grateful, and thank you so much for coming and sharing your story and your wisdom and your light with us.
Thank you for having me. This was so beautiful.
And how old is your kiddo?
He's 18 months.
18 months, yeah.
Yeah, I had an 8-year gap in between my second oldest and this one, so he's been a delight.
Yeah, it's difficult to wrap these kind of interviews up because they're so like heartful and personal and important, and all I can say is thank you so much for sharing.
Well, thank you for having me. And I look forward to following your podcast and hearing other interviews. The few that I was able to hear in English were so nice to connect with someone across the world who has such a heart for supporting others.
Thank you. Let's keep in contact, Emily.
For sure.
Good luck with your journey.
Thank you. You too.
All right. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Wow. I hope you're doing okay, folks. Thank you for listening. I'll share some of Emily's resources with you now that she mentioned, and I will also put it in the notes for this episode. In the show, Emily speaks of the book Healing Developmental Trauma by Lauren Keller. She also mentions The Body Keeps the Score by Bessel van der Kolk, and different materials by Peter Levine, and also the book The Fourth Trimester by Kimberly Ann Johnson. I hope you find these resources helpful. Thanks,
Emily, for your sharings. I really honor you, your story, your journey, and your wisdom, softness, and strength. Thank you for being you. As some of you might have noticed, I'm doing a free giveaway as a part of my Innate Postpartum Care Certification Program. I'm offering 6 free postpartum consults, and as of today, there is still 3 places left. The consult is really for anyone who has carried a child, and please don't hesitate to connect. Any pregnancy, no matter the length or the outcome, is a good starting point. A woman's body needs care, woman-centered care, throughout her life. The more we do to care for our postpartum bodies, the better our health will be long-term. You can email me at ayumurmama@gmail.com. I'll also write this in the notes. So don't hesitate to contact me if you're interested. I'm also working on setting up my website these days, and that really centers me and demands of me to be precise and clear about what I have to offer. I hope within a short time I'll be able to share this with you. And as a start, I want to speak out that I'm also a certified forest therapy guide, and that I have been offering and creating a blessed and wild alternative to a regular baby shower for mothers. So if you know a mom that is carrying a child, we can gather her community and give her a magical forest wander with ritual and deep wild connections with Mother Earth, her sisters, her ancestors, and her animal helpers to really prepare her for the journey of birthing like a mama bear and nesting like a grounded elder. And lastly, please check out my Facebook group at imother/ayumur podcast to join the community of wise women, and also find me on imother on Instagram. I usually post on Instagram in English and on Facebook in both languages.
You can also support the podcast at www.patreon.com at iMother with as little as €5 per month. And you can end the support at any time. I really appreciate my patrons and try my best to give treats and offerings from my guests and from me to my supporters. I hope in time I can make money from doing this podcast, and thus far this is how I see this happening. So thank you for taking the time to listen, spread the word, and offer your support. Next episode will be in Norwegian, and you will meet my dear Gestalt therapist, Grete Rønningen. Grete is a strong and wise woman who has helped me tremendously the past years, creating a safe space for my journeys into the unknown. Grete has a lot of wisdom and experience to offer, and I'm grateful and excited to share our relation and connection with you. So, guys, this was a lot. I hope you enjoyed it, and I'll see you again in about 2 weeks. Stay safe, stay wild, and stay free.